This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Chicago, I'm Claire Wayne and for Sashayan Simons, and this is In the Loop. Coming up, we talk about the biggest stories of the day, everything from the Bears, Pope Leo, sidewalks, and continued protests of the shooting of Minneapolis resident Renee Good. But first, are you looking for a new book? Well, Chicagoans will be able to visit four new Barnes & Noble locations opening in the area by the end of the year. One flagship store downtown, another in Hyde Park, Oak Park, and Skokie. But this news is also sparking worries from independent bookstores about the impact. Those fears are being driven in part by what we've heard from Volume's Book Cafe in Wicker Park. The store is closing its doors after a decade. Owner Rebecca George says sales dropped after Barnes & Noble opened at the sixth corner at Damon, Milwaukee, and North Avenues. So, can the little guy and the big guy coexist? In a few minutes, we'll hear from Rebecca George from Volumes and with the owner of Call and Response Bookstore in Hyde Park. But first, we checked in with the CEO of Barnes & Noble, James Daunt, who was calling in from Seattle. I started by asking James about what's behind the expansion.
We've been growing sort of very nicely over the last couple of years at Barnes & Noble, obviously, after a sort of long period of decline, that obviously was shared with independent booksellers, coinciding with the rise of Amazon. But since the pandemic, we've been doing nicely, as have independents, and we've been opening up lots of shops and really predominantly replacing the shops that were lost in this sort of very bleak period when so many closed through the 2000s.
Right. I mean, even in Chicago, several of the locations you've targeted are previous borders. And as you mentioned, sort of in this age of Amazon, why look back, I guess, to brick and mortar?
Well, my own view and certainly my experience in the United Kingdom, you will gather from the accent, that's where I come from, and where, incidentally, I'm an independent bookseller, was that we lost our way, we as sort of the collective noun of independent and chain booksellers, we lost our way when Amazon came up and started sort of reacting very badly to the pressure that they put upon us and creating, frankly, not very good bookstores in consequence. Once the full pressure of Amazon was understood, I think we returned to our roots and started running nice bookshops, community bookshops, welcoming bookshops, bookshops with personality. And that's allowed us to thrive again, because at the end of the day, and I think this is sort of central to our philosophy, is that a book bought in a bookstore is a better book than one that arrives in your mailbox.
Right. And you mentioned good bookshops, community sort of spaces. And with this continued expansion, I guess, what are your plans for more room to accommodate that, right? That sense of community, physical people who want to hang out, or maybe they want to work from the bookstore. Maybe they just want to sit down and flip through a magazine, treating it as more of one of these, a third space rather than just a place to have a transaction.
I think that's always what a good bookstore is. It is the caliber of the bookselling team within it, the personality that they engender in the space. And then obviously, depending on whether you're very large or very small or somewhere in between and how you specialize, the particular attributes of your store. Chain booksellers of Barnes & Noble, now being the sort of the last very large one standing, do something different to independents. And I think sort of create a, partly just through their sheer size, a different kind of community space. But, independents do it each in their own way. And to the heart of the question sort of here is, does do we get ourselves in a you've got mail type situation where, you know, because the large guy is opening, the small guy closes? I think that's something that we have to be sort of careful to avoid and is, you know, generally, if we are all very careful, something that shouldn't happen.
Speaking of people here in Chicago, sort of the little guys, so to speak, we have Rebecca George, co-owner of Volumes Book Cafe in Wicker Park. Also Courtney Bledsoe, owner of Call and Response Books in Hyde Park. And we should note that Volumes is closing its doors at the end of the month. After 10 years in the Wicker Park neighborhood, Barnes & Noble will be opening a location in Hyde Park, which is where Call and Response Books is. Good morning, ladies. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So this is to both of you. I guess, how did the two of you get into this business that James is describing, the book selling business?
I was in academia for years. I taught in CPS and then I taught at the college level. And books have been at the center of my life for my entire life. And I lived in a neighborhood where I did not have immediate access to new books and thought, hey, this is something I wanted to create. I also had been living in the city then for about 15 years and realizing I didn't really know my neighbors. And I think that the two things combined is that I wanted to create a welcoming space, a space to connect, and then also give people an access to up-and-coming authors, to new books, all the things.
So for me, it really was a 180 career change for me. I actually was a lawyer beforehand, but always a really active reader and avid reader. And for me, it is personal because I wanted to have a space that uplifts and celebrates authors of color, authors of the global majority, and especially in a city like Chicago, where that is so vital to our city's history, right? But having a space further that actually celebrates us in terms of the events curation. So we have trivia nights, we have author events, we have friend speed dating, we have concerts, all sorts of things. So it's not just a space where we're selling books that have that kind of bend or lean, but also thinking about how we can expansively cater to the needs of people in our community.
And talking about, you know, what your space is like now, is that sort of what the scene was like, the bookstore scene, in the neighborhood when you opened?
Yeah, so I mean, Hyde Park has a history of independent booksellers, right? We also have some co-op there as well as Powell's, which is a used bookstore. And we all are independent bookstores, but we all are doing different things and have sort of slightly different models as well. I like to say that we, as far as, you know, the events programming, we have a really robust events program schedule. And since we opened in May of 2024, we've done around 100 events, both in our store and hosted offsite. And we've really become known for our events lineup, which has been really awesome. So I think really changing the way that people view independent bookstores as something that can be really expansive and go beyond just kind of the transaction of purchasing a book or being in a literary space.
And plenty of seating, we should know.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Very
absolutely
important in a bookstore to have. Since opening, we'll give this to you, Rebecca. You've had some struggles financially over the years. You've had to close temporarily at one point. Mm-hmm. What have been some of the challenges and also some of the highlights?
Sure. Yeah, we closed at the end of our lease when we couldn't negotiate, especially during the pandemic. It was too cost prohibitive to stay in that space. And, you know, we had about 30 members of the community come together to help us find a new space, which is incredible. I think they realized what we were doing was really important, and that's where they access their books. That's where their kids are coming to story time. We just calculated, by the way, I think my sister's done about 1,500 story times over the course of 10 years, which is pretty remarkable. So we came back and, you know, Courtney and I were talking behind the scenes of, yeah, every bookstore, I think, has some financial things. Yeah, we had equipment break, and that cost us, you know, $15,000 that we don't have, especially when my sister and I are paying ourselves less than like $25,000 a year, you know, to get by. And we're putting on, you know, thousands of free events over the course of our tenure. You know, it's a labor of love. People say that a lot about bookstores. So a lot of that is just, you know, we're pinching pennies and everything's going in to pay taxes, to pay staff, to pay, you know, just existing. But it's definitely not a profitable thing to be in, but we kept it going.
And you have pointed to Barnes & Noble being part of the reason for this closing now, which we should note, this is not temporary. You are closing your doors.
We are absolutely closing our doors, yes. So in any business, you'll see a growth. I have data from every single day we've ever been in business. I can data analyze like the best of academics and can see where we have growth month to month, especially going into the new space. And pretty much from the get-go, after their opening at the end of October, over a year ago, it started to decline and then started to, there was a consistency. We thought maybe there'd be a turnaround, but it declined about between 20-30% depending on the month, which is untenable. I mean, that's, we can't survive on that.
James, do you have a reaction to that?
Well, obviously, it's you know, very sad. We get themselves into trouble. I'm saying from a Barnes & Noble perspective, we obviously bought the respect that Volumes, you know, was had the cafe and the events, and we didn't do any of those in Wicker Park. But we obviously opened a very, very large, you know, bookstore, just selling books, no cafe, as we would normally do. And, you know, it's really regrettable that our presence didn't sort of provoke more business, not less business. And, you know, I regret it greatly. But I think we are doing something very different in our store, you know, predominantly because it's sort of a huge range holding bookstore is very different from a cafe with books attached.
And you're saying that's why there isn't a cafe in the Wicker Park location, because you didn't want to compete with places like Volumes that serve food and coffee?
Well, you're always, when you're opening, if there is any other bookselling going on, then you have to respect that. And if that's a sort of, as it were, a full stock independent bookstore, then we don't open there. That's sort of very simple and straightforward. If, as here, there's one with a cafe and predominantly that seemed to be the cafe and the literary events being, or general events being what they're doing, we then didn't do that. You absolutely, as a large retailer of any sort, need to be extremely responsible in how you act. You know, opening up opposite somebody in a you've got mail type situation is not acceptable.
Well, I guess we'll look at it this way. You know, Wicker Park is Milwaukee Avenue, North Avenue. It's sort of a hub for lots of bookstores, independently owned, not just Volumes. You've got Myopic, Quimby's, Perpetual Books over on Division Street. Similar with Hyde Park. Powell's, you mentioned, we've got 57th Street Books. So, James, you know, thinking about, you know, places, neighborhoods that aren't necessarily considered book deserts, right? Why not open in one, right? Why open in Wicker Park or Hyde Park, where there is a plethora of options, rather than some of these more, I guess, deprived neighborhoods who maybe need the commerce, need the option for book buying?
Well, we do both, but also whilst there might be a number of bookstores in a location doing different things, be they specialist bookstores, used bookstores, bookstores which focusing on cafes or events or things, none of those are a large general bookstore of the sort that we open. And I think we do something very different when we open that. And I sort of over the many years that I, as an independent bookseller in London, and knocked around alongside Borders and Waterstones, which is the sort of Barnes & Noble equivalent, felt that, you know, we each of us do our own thing and one doesn't preclude the other. But I think, you know, personally, I think that these chain bookstores are rather extraordinary in their sheer scale, the way that everybody can come into them. They're not intimidating. They're not specialists. And they bring something very different to communities. I think it is right that we continue as far as we're able to open them. But where somebody is an independent is doing the same kind of thing, then we shouldn't.
And speaking of neighborhoods, Courtney Cullen response on the corner of Hyde Park Boulevard and Dorchester Ave. The new Barnes & Noble is going to be four, roughly, blocks away on 55th Street in late February is when that's slated to open. So what is your reaction, knowing that this is four blocks from your shop? Do you think having more big box bookstores in the city, in Hyde Park, is a bad thing?
My initial reaction, to be honest, was being a little bit disheartened and frustrated by the introduction of a big box corporation that does compete with independent bookstores. I think that's objectively true. But I will say that doesn't change our mission and our values as an independent bookstore. Like I said before, we have really become known for both the intentional curation of our bookshelves, from the titles that we select for all ages and in all genres, but also the intentional curation of our events lineup, and that we've become really well known for that. But I will also say I've really been humbled and privileged by the support that we've had from the community. When we first announced that we were opening, we had neighbors reach out and volunteer to paint the murals in our store. So it really has been a community effort, even getting the store up and running. But beyond that, if you take a look at our events lineup, it really is driven by community members and for community members. We've had fundraisers for value-driven, things. We've had trivia nights. We've had open mic nights that are led by local poets. We have friend mixers that have been a really smash hit. And so it really is a testament to the power of independent booksellers. Like I said before, it really is showing that we are true third spaces and that we are providing something really special for the community. And so again, while we have that frustration of this development, I think remaining cautiously optimistic that the people who have been supporting us and we have been supporting in turn will continue to do that. And we will continue to do that as long as we're open.
And the flow will remain uninterrupted.
I'm not so sure about that, but I will say that we are providing something really unique and really beautiful in our space, especially given the fact that we focus on uplifting voices that traditionally have been pushed to the margins in publishing. And so for us, you know, again, while it is very discouraging to see this kind of development in a space that actually has, you know, been known for independent bookstores in Hyde Park and Kenwood, I would say that, you know, again, remaining optimistic that the people who have been showing up for us from the beginning will continue to do so. And as the word continues to get out about our store, people will see the really beautiful things that we've got going on in our space.
Here's the big question. James has sort of answered this. Can big box bookstores and indie bookstores coexist, especially when you're on the same street or in the same neighborhood?
Is that to me?
Sure.
You know what? Not really. I just want to address, number one, continuing to call us a cafe, which is only about 15% of our business. We've sold over maybe a quarter million books. That is 250,000 books in the course of our 10 years. That's 85% of our business. We've done as big events as like Hillary Clinton, David Sedaris, Printer's Row bookseller for all of those events. To call us just a cafe with a small selection of books is really insulting. I also want to say that you're saying that James Dond is saying that he's not going by other bookstores because he's offering something different, but they just put in 800 feet from Anderson's bookstore in Naperville, less than a mile from Bookbin in Northbrook. You got Bookmine in Copperfield in Napa. You have two blocks from the Book Loft and Dandelion Books in Oak Park. And those are independent bookstores who are carrying the exact same books. So to say that it's doing something different, it's not. And it could be in any other area, but it's very predatory behavior, in my humble opinion.
It's a book-selling ecosystem. I mean, that is fair to say. Both small and indie bookstores and big box bookstores are all a part of this ecosystem. But James, is there something that you think that Barnes & Noble could be doing more to support that ecosystem, right? To keep everybody thriving, some of these existing indie bookstores opening, as well as, you know, some of these smaller mom and pop shops.
Yes, we have to be very careful in as we open these shops to make sure that we aren't treading on somebody's toes. I've been on the other side of this for many years. My first sort of 22 years of bookselling was as an independent, very close to the large boxes. And you know, if you are running a good independent, I think you can coexist because you're doing something very, very different. And in my own case, I thrived, and I would hope that everybody else that we do come up against, that we have really thought through sensibly and carefully about whether they are the same or different, and whether we will hurt them or not, and can be complementary to them. We endeavor to be complementary. Obviously, it's possible that at times that won't always be the case, in which case we, you know, that the requirement for us to really think this through and be careful is there, and I fully acknowledge that.
Courtney, we just mentioned Barnes & Noble will be opening in Hyde Park, very near your shop, next month. Is there anything that you feel like that could be done? You're saying you're going to support rely on support from neighbors. But is there anything that you feel that could be done maybe to ease some of the concerns that you and your surrounding indie stores are feeling with this looming opening?
Yeah, I think, for us, it is, I think it is very difficult for an independent bookstore to survive in a situation like this. But what I will say is that what we continue to do is also emphasize the fact that it's not just a transaction about where you're buying your books from. If that's the case, you could buy it off of Amazon, you could buy it from Barnes & Noble, you could buy it from pretty much anywhere. But it is actually more about the money that we're putting into our communities, the intentionality that goes behind where our money goes to, right? For example, the independent bookstores in the city have been doing so much with respect to advocacy. They are partnering with local schools, with local creators, with local artists, with local authors in ways that are really meaningful and uplifting our communities, right? And so for us, it's been really important to continue to educate people about the importance of conscious consumerism, where we're spending our money. For us, it's also, people will come in and they might ask for something that we might not stock, but we can always order it for them. But the other thing that we also do is we say, hey, these people are asking for things. Maybe we start to change what we stock, right? Like, this sounds like something that would go really well in our curation. So to that end as well, it is really a community endeavor. People are actually changing the way that our bookstore looks because we're saying these are the things that our community wants, and we actually cater to that too more expansively. So again, it is really important for people to understand too that independent booksellers are people in your community who want everyone to benefit and to be a part of the literary scene and get more into reading. That's what our passion is. That's what our goals here are.
It's a ritual. Absolutely. I mean, every part of it, right? It's like you're walking home from school, you're walking past the bookstore, you see a story time. That's integral to both of your communities, Hyde Park and Wicker Park. So that's the question. People are still reading?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been a really amazing because most of the people who come in, a lot of the people who come in, they either say, like, I've been reading for forever, or I just want a book recommendation. And so it's been really amazing to chat about books with people who might be newer to reading or might be veterans, but are just looking for something new. And so it is, again, really a community space that we have our regulars who are so beloved, who have just been a really integral part of our space. So it's been a really beautiful thing.
Rebecca, what's next for you?
I'm not sure. Finding a job with health insurance probably is on the top of my list. But I hope, actually, I do have plans to stay working and advocating for the Chicago independent bookstore community and to continue to do things for my own community. I mean, we've made really a family of the residents of Wicker Park, Bucktown, and beyond. And we hope to keep that going, whether or not that's just with book clubs or continuing to do things like book swaps that we do in the farmers market or connecting with schools like we have done for the last decade. So, yeah, it's really hard to disconnect, and I don't plan on disconnecting from our community anytime soon.
Courtney, any highlight events you want to discuss next on the docket?
Yeah, so we just are continuing we have Friends Speed Dating, which has been a smash hit in the past, and people have been really excited about that. We have Game Night coming up, Trivia Night, which is monthly, and that always sells out really quickly. So those are things, again, beyond even author events that we have that are really have become beloved in our space. And so that's been a really exciting thing to continue doing in the future. But in the past, we've done really great author events with Hanif Abdurraqib, one of my favorite authors of all time, which was also really a huge privilege as a young bookstore, a baby bookstore, actually. So really looking forward to in 2026 continuing our really diverse lineup.
And as long as the doors are open, the dialogue will remain open as well. That's Courtney Bledsoe, the owner of Call and Response Books in Hyde Park, and Rebecca George, co-owner of Volumes Book Cafe in Wicker Park. We were also joined by CEO of Barnes & Noble, James Daunt. Thank you all truly for taking the time to have this discussion.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Now, it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them all down, WBEZ anchor Lisa Labas and WBEZ reporter Mike Puente. We started the conversation talking about, of course, Bears win.
Bears!
Did you guys watch?
Yes.
No, I'm not interested.
Did you die? How many times did you die during the game?
You know, it's getting to the point, and you could ask my kids.
Your whole neighborhood, probably.
Right.
Mike.
Everyone's like, Mike, calm down. I mean, my heart, I have to like almost brace myself on the couch, like, stop freaking out. You're going to get a heart attack.
Well,
it's
That was the case at Soldier Field, too. WBEZ Summer Van Betten was at the game repping WBEZ, and she got some reaction from fans.
We won! Yeah!
This was one of the best Bears games I've ever been to.
Well, I feel like we're going to make it to the Super Bowl.
Chicago Bears fans are extremely loyal. We've had an extremely hard past few years, but this is just like everything.
Just like everything.
Oh, man. I went to the last Bears game of the season, and they almost made a huge comeback in the fourth quarter, but didn't win it. But you could just, nobody was nervous. And that's the thing. There's so much confidence in I'm not accustomed to that because I'm used to Bears blowing it. And this whole new generation is like, nope, we got this. We're not worried.
I don't know about that. I had to apologize to my husband for like screaming really loudly when they scored that last touchdown on Saturday night. I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
it was a little much.
Everybody was screaming.
That was a little much. But I get you about that quiet confidence that they've got. But I'm also nervous every time the Bears celebrate after a touchdown or something. I'm like, no, keep it cool, man. You know, just chill out.
Well, speaking of keeping it cool, Sasha, just last week, as we know, talked with Hall of Famer, former Chicago Bear linebacker Mike Singletary was with us, and he said when it comes to the playoffs and looking ahead, the Bears can't rely on this sort of fourth quarter mojo that had been working for them. It worked for them, you know, on Saturday. They've come to be known for this, but that's exactly what keeps happening, Mike. What do you think is this going to keep working? Is this just how it's going to be?
I don't think it's a strategy. I think that's how the game is playing out. But I will say this, I think it's becoming a psychological advantage for the Bears because teams know they got to play a whole game against the Chicago Bears. They're not going to stop. Fourth quarter just seems to be their quarter. Kayla becomes this Iceman guy. And just, I don't think it's a strategy that they have, but at the same time, it's working for them.
At least the political leaders doing some trash talking.
A little bit of cheese, grater, posting.
Oh, man.
Fair enough. You know, it was just a little fun. Mayor Brandon Johnson, the governor, J.B. Pritzker, all posting, you know, little good-natured ribbing against Wisconsin. Yep, that's for sure.
And they've got the Rams on Sunday at Soldier Field. We'll be watching.
Yeah, they will. But, you know, T.J. Edwards, Bears linebacker, he's going to miss the game. He's out the rest of the season, hopefully more than just Sunday's game. But he did get hurt during the second quarter of the Packers-Bears game. So they're going to miss him for sure.
We'll see if we can get it done without him.
You know, I just do love how it's just bringing Chicagoans full excitement. I mean, everywhere there's just excitement. I wear my Bears hat. Everyone's like, go Bears, go Bears. Right. And including in, I got to say, Northwest Indiana, there's cakes and cookies and cupcakes being made everywhere. And people are just loving the Bears right now.
Yeah, but they're also loving the University of Indiana. You know, come on.
Absolutely.
They've got a big chance.
Well, I didn't want to mention it, but big game on Friday, big game on Saturday. Okay. It's been a football craziness at my house.
It has been.
Football mania in the Midwest. But Mike, Chicagoans weren't just celebrating this weekend. They were also doing protesting. Can you talk a little bit about what went down?
Well, that's right. Chicagoans continue to protest the fatal shooting of Minneapolis resident Renee Good. There were two rallies in Chicago on Saturday, including one that drew hundreds to the Chicago Water Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Protesters also condemned the U.S. military intervention in Venezuela. There were also protests held in suburban areas like Elk Grove Village and Arlington Heights. So, you know, this week's protests are the latest in a steady stream of anti-ICE demonstrations in and around Chicago over the last year. And the rallies will continue, organizers mentioned another protest planned for MLK Day on next Monday.
Chicagoans still taking to the streets. And we have some news out of Vatican City from the streets there from our Chicago Pope, Mike.
That's right. And you got to know that Pope Leo is paying attention to a lot of what's going on in his home country, the United States. Pope Leo XIV has denounced how nations are increasingly using force to assert their dominion worldwide. The Chicago-born pontiff, of course, says such warmongering is completely undermining peace and the post-World War II legal order. So, I mean, we know who's been doing the most saber-rattling. It's President Trump. Everything from Greenland to, I'm going to take this, I'm going to take that, I'm going to take that. And some of his comments to the New York Times over the last week has been, it's been troubling to say he doesn't feel he has any limitations. I'm not really sure why he believes that, but let's face it. I mean, Pope Leo didn't call Trump out by name, but it does feel that's who he's talking about.
But he is continuing to preach peace. He had a significant meeting, Lisa, today.
Yeah, Claire. Pope Leo XIV met today with Venezuelan opposition leader, Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Corina Machado. They had a private audience at the Vatican, the pontiff calling for Venezuela to remain an independent country even after this U.S. Capturing former Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Pope Leo saying he was following the developments in Venezuela with deep concern. He's urging the protection of human and civil rights in that country.
Couple of infrastructure headlines. I know you both own homes. We know yep. Mike has a driveway. he's talked about it before when we're discussing shoveling. But as you may also know, maintaining and fixing the sidewalks in front of your houses usually falls on the homeowner. That's your responsibility. And that cost is also your responsibility. Mm. So now some Chicagoans can get help with this, Lisa?
Yeah, if you're in Chicago, you can get help. That's just today. So the City Department of Transportation, you need to call 311 and you can apply online or, you know, talk to someone at 311 and apply. This is kind of a first come, first serve thing. It's only until 10 o'clock tonight. So if you really need sidewalk repairs, you have to apply with the Department of Transportation. They're going to give first preference to, you know, whoever calls first. Also, if you're older, if you've got a disability, so they'll take all that into consideration. But now's the time. Again, call 311 if you want your sidewalk repaired.
Yeah, applications open right now and only today. Mm-hmm. Lisa, what else are you watching?
All right. You know, I'm starting to get excited about the Olympics. I feel like the Bears have wound me up a little bit. And now I'm thinking we're just 3 weeks-ish away. We're all going to look at the beautiful scenery in northern Italy. And I did see that the speed skating team has a few Chicagoans on it. I'm pretty excited about speed skating. You've got speed skater Sarah Warren. She's the great niece of Bears President Kevin Warren.
Wow. Also,
she's made the Olympics team. She grew up in Willowbrook. She attended Hinsdale South High School. That was my rival high school, Hinsdale Central, Hinsdale South.
Wow.
And she had several ACL injuries, 10 surgeries, and now she's made the team. So that's fascinating. That's great news and something to get excited about. Also on the U.S. speed skating team, you've got Oak Park native Emery Lehman and Ethan Sepperin from West Suburban Glen Ellen. So Olympics.
Us Chicagoans were pretty arctic.
Yeah, and a bunch of women on the U.S. hockey team. So
something to watch, certainly, if you're tired of football, especially. So from sidewalks to bike lanes, this is one that means temporary bad news, I guess, Mike, for cyclists in the South Loop. What's going on?
Well, that's right, Claire. The city of Chicago is pausing bike lane construction in parts of the South Loop. That's the Block Club's Chicago reports the city has removed protected lanes on 18th Street because of safety concerns from neighbors. So Third Ward Alderman Pat Dowell says the change will make it easier for emergency vehicles to pass through the area. And the Department of Transportation says the project will pick back up in the spring.
Yeah, some of these bike lanes have been interesting, especially with the snow, because they're not getting plowed with those protected corridors.
So if they're not getting plowed, then how are you going to use them?
Exactly. Anyway, so. Exactly. So South Loop, giving that a try. But we've also got a little bit of fun news, Mike, to end with something positive. There are some vintage cars rooming in Chicago today. What's going on?
That's right, Claire. There's a celebration of 100 years of Route 66. It's coming to Chicago starting today. Vintage cars that began a drive along the historic road on January 3rd in Santa Monica, California. They're expected to make their final stop at the intersection of Jackson and Adams this evening. America's Automotive Trust says the cars that took part in the road trip will head north and will be on display at the Detroit Auto Show starting Wednesday.
So people getting their kicks.
Yeah, I thought they were talking about my car, which is kind of, it's not really a official vintage car, but it's starting to get too old, so.
And you can get the plates for that when that happens.
That's right.
That's WBEZ's Michael Puente and Lisa Lavis. Thank you for joining us this morning.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.